The Ukraine Defense Contact Group wrapped up their meeting.
Western military leaders vowed more support for Ukraine was on the way, promising more munitions for Ukraine's ground-based air defenses and a new plan to train Ukraine on F-16 fighter jets.
Plus, a hospital destroyed in Dnipro.
For the moment, we know about at least 30 people injured. Some of them are in serious condition. Two people were confirmed killed.
And later in the program, Senator Lindsey Graham visits Kyiv, and artists are turning ammo boxes into works of art. Today is Friday, May 26th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Starting us off with some diplomatic news. Chinese Special Envoy for Eurasian Affairs Li Hui and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov met in Moscow on Friday as Beijing heads a diplomatic effort for a peace deal in Ukraine. Li arrived in Moscow on the final stop of a diplomatic tour that started in Kyiv and has taken him to Warsaw, Paris, and Berlin. China has urged both sides to agree to a gradual de-escalation leading to a comprehensive ceasefire. Ukraine says it will only consider peace settlements after Russian troops leave Ukrainian territory. Ukrainian leaders say they took issue with the plan for not stating that Russia should withdraw behind its 1991 borders, though they later said they were open to some parts of the plan. The U.S. has said that China presents itself publicly as neutral and seeking peace, while at the same time reflecting Russia's false narrative about the war, providing it with non-lethal assistance, and even considering lethal assistance as well. China denies that. U.S. defense leaders are emphasizing they will continue to support Ukraine for as long as it takes to defend itself against Russia, in a war they emphasize Kyiv is not losing and that Moscow cannot win. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington reports that those leaders are also emphasizing the U.S. is not looking to enter into direct conflict with Russia.
At a news conference on Thursday following a virtual meeting of dozens of countries supporting Ukraine militarily, the U.S. Defense Secretary and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff told reporters that F-16 fighter jets that some nations are to supply to the Ukrainians will not be a magic weapon to quickly turn the tide of the war. The Joint Chiefs Chairman, General Mark Milley, noted Ukraine's strategic objectives are focused on the ground, ridding the territory of about 200,000 Russian troops, something not quickly achievable militarily.
That means fighting is going to continue. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be hard.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin responded to concerns that U.S.-made military vehicles, reportedly used by a militia in its incursion into Russia, could be used as a pretext by Moscow to bring the United States directly into the war.
We are not at war with Russia. This is Ukraine's fight. Our goal is to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to make sure Ukraine is successful.
Milley said such U.S. assistance will continue, not only to help counter Russia's unprovoked aggression, but to uphold the principles of democracy, sovereignty, and the international rule of law. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
And on the subject of defense, the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, comprised of military leaders from about 50 nations, met on Thursday to discuss what Kyiv needs to counter Russian invaders, along with plans for Ukrainians to train on and acquire F-16 fighter jets. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin hosted the virtual meeting from the Pentagon. VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the details.
As Russia's invasion of Ukraine enters its 16th month, Western military leaders vowed more support for Ukraine was on the way, promising more munitions for Ukraine's ground-based air defenses and a new plan to train Ukraine on F-16 fighter jets, an expensive international effort that will be led by Denmark and the Netherlands. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin.
This costs money, and not every country has F-16s or is able to chime in terms of training or maintenance and sustainment but they can provide monetary assistance.
The top U.S. military officer, General Mark Milley, tried to temper expectations amid the excitement surrounding the F-16 announcement.
There are no magic weapons. An F-16 is not, neither is anything else. 10 F-16s, $1 billion. You add the sustainment cost, another $1 billion. So you're talking about $2 billion for 10 aircraft. The Russians have 1,000 fourth and fifth generation fighters.
In total, the Ukraine Defense Contact Group has committed about $65 billion in security assistance for Ukraine since the start of the war. And officials made clear they want those weapons to change the dynamics on the battlefield, not to attack Russian territory. The top U.S. military officer, General Mark Milley,
we have asked the Ukrainians not to use U.S.-supplied equipment for direct attacks into Russia. Why is that? Because we don't want this is a Ukrainian war. It is not a war between the United States and Russia. It's not a war between NATO and Russia.
Russian officials have said F-16s would raise the question of NATO involvement and the risk of nuclear apocalypse. It also said a cross-border raid into Russian territory this week used U.S.-supplied weapons, a claim the Pentagon says it is looking into. Anti-Kremlin Russian paramilitary groups claimed responsibility, and Ukraine has denied involvement in the attacks. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
The White House said Thursday that it has seen reports that Russia has moved forward with their plans to deploy tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus, but Washington has seen no reason to adjust its nuclear posture. White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre.
So look, we've seen the reports of Russia-Belarus arrangement, and we'll continue to monitor certainly the implications here. We have not seen any reason to adjust our own nuclear posture. You've heard us say that before, nor any indications Russia is preparing to use nuclear weapons for Belarus. Speaking to that particular issue, this is yet another example of making irresponsible and provocative choices. So we remain committed to collective defense of the NATO alliance. And I'll just leave it there.
Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko said the warheads were already on the move, though there is no confirmation from Russian authorities. If accurate, it would mark the Kremlin's first deployment of such bombs outside Russia since the 1991 fall of the Soviet Union. Russian President Vladimir Putin maintains that the United States and its allies are fighting an escalating proxy war against Russia after Russia sent troops into Ukraine of February last year. The plan for the nuclear deployment in Belarus was announced by Putin in an interview on state TV on March 25th. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Senator Lindsey Graham visits Kyiv and a hospital is destroyed in early morning shelling. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv gets us caught up.
Actually, it was quite a huge attack over the night across Ukraine and Kyiv particularly as well. But in the morning, another attack happened, and the main target was Dnipro this time. And as you correctly said, it was it was a really bad attack on Dnipro this time. So what we have for the moment that the missile hit a hospital in Dnipro, as well as a veterinary hospital, which was located just next to the main building of the hospital. For the moment, we know about at least 30 people injured. Some of them are in a serious condition. Two people were confirmed killed, and three people are confirmed as missed. So the operations, the rescue operation is still ongoing, and for the moment we are waiting for updated numbers from the official from the officials in the Dnipro region.
Now, previously, Ukrainian anti-missile defenses have been very good. Just the other day, you told me they shot down 36 out of 36 drones coming in. Do we know why they weren't able to stop this?
Well, actually, air defense remained not bad, and it remained not bad for this attack as well, and especially for the attack over the night. I will just give you the example. So over the night, it was an attack with 17 missiles and 31 drones. and 23 drones were destroyed and 10 missiles were destroyed. But this morning attack, unfortunately, Ukraine, as Ukrainian officials say, that Ukraine has a very good air defense system in general right now, but still it's not enough because Ukraine is quite big, and unfortunately, such situations also happen, so air defense could not always be 100% successful.
Even though the missile defense is operating at a very high percentage, that small percentage that does get through can cause lots of damage.
Correct, especially if we're talking about direct hits especially if this is something that, sometimes such attacks happen very quickly.
Now, we know that Russia has been accused of targeting civilians in the past. They deny that. Have the Russian authorities said anything about this hospital?
For the moment, I cannot confirm any official comments from Kremlin or from Russian authorities. Let's wait maybe for additional information coming from Russia. But unfortunately, as you correctly said, this is not the first time. And this is something that, this is something that could be also considered as another war crime, because hospital particularly is definitely not a target not a war target, not a military target.
So, Anna, you sound a little different today. You're clearly in a car on your way from someplace. Can you tell us where you just were? What did you see?
I was just at the press conference with Senator Graham, who came to Kyiv. It's his third visit to Kyiv during the war. He met with Ukrainian officials, with President Zelensky, and during the press conference, he told some interesting information. Particularly, he was very positive about what he heard in terms of the frontline updates from Ukrainian officials and certain future plans as well. Of course, he didn't mention any details, but he made it quite clear that he is very optimistic about about the upcoming events at the front, at the battlefield, let's put it this way. And also, again, he said that he is quite impressed with what he heard in terms of the situation at the battlefield, meaning that the level of damages that Russian forces got during the battles in this past months, and certain very optimistic vibes were quite clear from him, and he was not really hiding them. He said that Ukraine is to expect some positive news. So let's see. But again, we don't have particular details, because this is something that he cannot tell publicly.
Okay. No doubt we'll have more information on that later. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
UNICEF says an estimated 1.5 million Ukrainian children are at risk of depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other mental health issues, with potentially long-lasting effects. The AP's Karen Chamas reports.
In Lviv, near the border with Poland, Ukrainian children dance with adults trying to bring some joy in wartime. One of the kids playing, 9-year-old Andriy Hinkin, recalls the day their house was shelled in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk region. We ran out of the house, but everything was in a white fog. I was wounded right there. Then we didn't see Dad. When the fog lifted, he found his father on the porch, motionless and covered in blood, after being struck by a Russian projectile. Their foster mother, Nina Polyakova, told the AP Andriy is usually calmer than his sister Olha, but that at night there are still bursts. Sometimes they are screaming. Hundreds of kids have been killed in Ukraine. For the survivors, the wide-ranging trauma is certain to leave psychological scars that will follow them into adolescence and adulthood. I'm Karen Chamas.
More than 1 million people have started learning the Ukrainian language since last February. This, according to data from the language learning app Duolingo. They say interest in Ukrainian remains high, and the top three countries with the most learners of the language are the United States, Britain, and Poland. Correspondent Lisa Bakalets has this report from Warsaw.
Every evening, twice a week, Polish investment specialist Marlena Echinger attends Ukrainian language classes. Knowing English and Chinese, she now wants to learn the neighboring country's language. Marlena Echinger explains.
Sometimes Polish and English is not enough to communicate, and I just wanted to get some basics, just to say hi and get to know the alphabet so that I can read emails at least and try to communicate better.
The Ukrainian language class Echinger attends is the initiative of the Business Consulting Center for Ukrainians in Warsaw called DIA Business. They arrange several Polish-Ukrainian events and already have Polish classes for Ukrainians. Now they see an interest in Ukrainian from Poles. Victoria Bulgakova, DIA Business Coordinator, provides more details.
It appeared just as Ukrainians need Polish, so Poles need Ukrainian. It helps to understand each other better and to communicate more effectively. We didn't expect the demand to be so high.
This offline group started learning Ukrainian 2 months ago. Usually up to 10 people attend the course. They can already say some simple phrases in Ukrainian.
Do you want coffee with milk or tea with lemon?
Jerzy Wrzesinski is a professional translator. He knows Russian perfectly, but wants to avoid using it while talking to Ukrainians now. Jerzy Wrzesinski clarifies his point.
I just want to get to know Ukrainian and talk to our guests in their language. Maybe, firstly, not so much talk because it's a long way to go, but at least understand them well.
According to Wrzesinski, even for a professional translator, learning Ukrainian appears to take a lot of work. The Ukrainian teacher Oksana Pestrykova acknowledges that the Polish and Ukrainian languages have similarities, but that doesn't make the learning process much easier. Oksana Pestrykova explains.
The languages are grammatically similar. You don't need to study 16 tense forms as in English. There are just three. Also, the Polish and Ukrainian languages share about 70% of the common vocabulary. But sometimes it makes studying harder because many similar words mean something different in Ukrainian than in Polish.
Pestrykova has two online groups which were launched by the non-profit organization Ukrainian House in Warsaw. She assures us that the interest in the Ukrainian language has risen since the war started more than a year ago. Students have different reasons.
For instance, volunteers. Some are already familiar with the Ukrainian language by ear, but don't speak it. We also have two groups of Polish teachers with Ukrainian children at their schools. They want to get along with the children.
According to the educational platform Duolingo, during the last year, Poland became the third country with the most learners of Ukrainian after the United States and United Kingdom. Cindy Blanco, a senior learning scientist at Duolingo, provides the details.
1.3 million people started studying the language after that February invasion. For example, in the U.S., Ukrainian before the war began was about ranked number 36. And after the war, it jumped 14 places.
Russian, on the contrary, is losing its popularity according to the Duolingo data. In 2022, it was ranked number 9 globally. Now it has dropped to 11. Blanco notes the interest in Ukrainian has remained consistent in the 15 months since Russia's invasion of Ukraine began. Lesia Bakalets, VOA News, Warsaw.
The traveling art exhibition Icons on Ammo Boxes has stopped in New York City in early May, features the work of Ukrainian artists Oleksandr Klimenko and Sonia Altanova. The two paint traditional Christian icons on real ammunition boxes from the Ukrainian front lines, symbolically portraying life overcoming death. Nina Vishneva has the story narrated for us today by Anna Rice.
These 17 ammunition boxes have seen actual fighting on the front lines in Ukraine, and in May, they were in New York City, part of an exhibit called Icons on Ammo Boxes. Ukrainians Oleksandr Klimenko and Sonia Altanova created these pieces. Klimenko started working on the project in 2014, the same year Russia annexed Crimea.
I asked the guys, what do you do with those afterwards? And they said they burn them. But I saw the box lid, and it amazed me how much it looked like a classical board used for painting icons.
Klimenko couldn't come to New York for the exhibition, but he was happy to know the sales proceeds went to help the Pirogov First Volunteer Mobile Hospital, which provides medical care on the front lines of the war in Ukraine.
A year ago, I spent 2 months working at a hospital as a volunteer. I worked as a driver near Irpin in Bucha. I've seen and I know very well what it's like to save lives.
The exhibition had both newly painted icons made by Klimenko and his wife, artist Sonia Atlantova, and some of their older works from private collections in U.S. museums. Curator Tatiana Borodina helped get all the icons together for the exhibition.
People get tired of being compassionate. This really is a tough war, and it's tough to constantly be compassionate. But we need to awaken people. We need to show them the reality, the transformation of deadly boxes used for ammunition into such beautiful artifacts.
Some of the boxes are charred. Some have bullet holes, some are chipped. They are a good reminder that the violence is real.
These are the works I started while at the front lines, near Bakhmut. Right here, I created a collection of works I called Saints of the Front Lines. Here's the collection dedicated to Bucha, to Irpin. We've been working on them for a year now.
The goal of the exhibition was not only to introduce New Yorkers to the icons, but also to sell some of them to raise funds for the volunteer hospital in Ukraine. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, NRI's VOA News.
Now, we take a look at a recent statement by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. This is from polygraph.info, a fact-checking website produced by Voice of America. It's a resource for verifying the increasing volume of disinformation and misinformation being distributed and shared globally.
In an interview with the far-right Russian channel Zargorod TV, aired on May 17th, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov claimed that Germany's current leaders have Nazi genes. When we look at the actions of the current German leaders, who are the children of World War II German officers and members of the SS, we have to say that many people in the current German administration have inherited Nazi genes. That, he suggested, explains Germany's support for Ukraine. Lavrov's claims are false as a matter of science and fail to accurately explain Germany's Ukraine policy. Lavrov's assertion about Nazi genes actually mirrors Nazi thought on how race and/or ethnicity determine abstract human qualities like behavior. Known as eugenics, Nazi Germany used this ideology to justify the mass killing of selected peoples and legitimize racism. Scientists have widely discredited such beliefs. President Vladimir Putin and other Russian officials have also falsely claimed Ukraine was invaded to denazify it. However, there is no Nazi regime in Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was born to a Russian-speaking Jewish family. His great-grandfather and three great-uncles died in the Holocaust. And while Moscow claims to be protecting ethnic Russians in Ukraine, it is Russia that regularly uses eliminationist rhetoric against Ukrainians.
For more fact-checking and information, visit polygraph.info. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.